And welcome to Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast. I'm your host for today, Brandon Shamutella, and we've got a very special episode for you. Before we introduce our special guest and our topic, let's go to our foreign correspondents and our local correspondent, Chris Haig. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm good. I am tired, but I am very much looking forward to the episode.
Good, excellent. I am very happy to hear that. It's been a month since we recorded, and we've got some fun episodes coming your way. And the last episode was pretty good. I think we did a good job of it.
We did.
Tom, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm really excited. I'm especially eager to figure out who our special guest is, because you know I really pay no attention whatsoever in between taping episodes. So I'm looking forward to figuring out who we're having on the show. But no, I'm happy to be here. We finally had a break to our winter weather. Oh my lord, it was February was in Saskatchewan was minus 30 every day or colder. We've got a spring day today, so everyone's in a really good mood around here.
Yes, I'm very thrilled that we have some beautiful weather. It's very nice out there. The snow is finally starting to melt. The roads are a mess. And I don't know. I'm just happy to be recording some Hitchcock, and then after this, we're gonna have some friends over. We're gonna order some pizza. It's gonna be a good day. So I'm looking forward to it.
So I should be there around 5, Brandon? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, to be there at 5. Yes, you can have the crusts.
Okay, I'll bring the Coke.
Yes, but we don't actually plan anything, so we just randomly grabbed a guest. I was outside of Walmart. I saw an old lady, and I said, "Hey, do you want to talk about Hitchcock?" And she's like, "Sure." No, I'm just kidding. We've got special guest Manish Mathur. Did I say that right again, Manish?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Okay, good. Right on. We had Manish on a little while ago, and we covered the farmer's wife. That was a few episodes back. And Manish had been working on a big project for the Talk Film Society where he'd been posting articles and going through all of the Alfred Hitchcock movies. And he's just recently finished this whole project, this whole massive project's all done. And so we wanted to get him on to talk about it because it's a pretty amazing achievement to do. You know, to be writing for 2 solid years, watching Hitchcock all the time. I couldn't think of a more amazing hobby to have. So, Manish, we're going to ask you today about writing about the 52 Hitchcock films that you got to watch. So, Tom, why don't you take it away?
Right on. No, that's a heck of an undertaking, to such a big project. It's really exciting for you. Now, you call the series A Beginner's Guide to Alfred Hitchcock. So who is the beginner? Is it you or is it the reader?
Well, I initially had planned it to be the reader, actually, because my initial goal was just to do like a 10-part miniseries as like, here are the 10 films, you know, someone should watch if they want to get into Alfred Hitchcock. And I, like, actually had crafted, like, an order of the 10 films. It was going to start with, you know, Rear Window, then 39 Steps, Notorious, Strangers on a Train, Psycho, Shadow of a Doubt. I believe the next one would be The Lady Vanishes, and then North by Northwest, and then Rebecca, and then Vertigo. But then, actually, what happened is I was going to start doing the article on Vertigo and end the series, but it ended up being, like, in June that, like, I got to this point, and the Talk Film Society, we were doing articles on Pride Month, you know, for, like LGBT-themed films, and I was like, you know, I should try to tie in the column into LGBT cinema, and I wanted to talk about Rope with Farley Granger and John Dahl and James Stewart. And then after that, I found out that it was going to be the 45th anniversary for Frenzy. And I was like, well, I should write about Frenzy because it's, you know, 45th anniversary. And a lot of people that I were talking to really liked the movie. So I did Frenzy. And then I was like, I'm just going to keep going. And until I decided to stop, and it just ended up happening. And then once I saw that, like, Vertigo was having its 60th anniversary in, like, May of 2018, I was like, well, I'm going to definitely hold off on that and write about that film for that, you know, kind of landmark year for it. So, and then it just kind of kept going and going. And then once I was getting into films that I hadn't seen before, like a lot of the silent films that you guys have already covered, I was like, I don't want to do these because I don't really care for silent cinema too much. But I was like, I'm going to power through it.
We're all laughing when you talk about not wanting to cover the silent films. We hear you. Yeah. We're with you on that page.
I mean, you guys definitely starting at the beginning is smart because you got all those out of the way. Now you can talk about, you know, the movies that people have actually heard of and can access and see. But, like, for me, I realized that because I did all those, like, famous films first, I'm like, well, now it's, you know, the end of 2018 and I'm talking about, you know, Easy Virtue and Champagne and Doubt and stuff like that. So it was, it was quite an undertaking, but I'm glad that I sat through all of them because, like, now at least I can say, like, I've seen every completed surviving Alfred Hitchcock feature film. So it's a nice thing to have, to be thinking about and have done. So, and then I was like, I have to do Family Plot last. Like, that's his last film. That'll be, like, the perfect way to end the column. So, I like, having that movie, which I like a lot, as, like, the light at the end of the tunnel really got me through, like, the 1920s.
Mm-hmm. So, you didn't find a copy of Mountain Eagle anywhere?
You know what? I did not, but I can't say that I looked very hard for it.
Okay. Well, we forgive you then.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a fantastic project that you've undertaken, and I think it's absolutely, you know, incredible, and, you know, the fact it ties into Pride Month and everything is fantastic. And I know that on your previous appearance, when you were doing The Farmer's Wife with us, bad sentence, taken out of context, that you... I know, but, you know, when you say a sentence, you're just like, nope, okay, moving on. But when you were on The Farmer's Wife episode with us, rephrase that, you did talk to us a bit about kind of like, you know, your relationship with Hitchcock and all that sort of thing. But for people who haven't listened to that episode, could, you know, why did you pick Hitchcock of all things, or of all directors?
Yeah, I mean, I started watching Hitchcock a little later. It was like in my, I want to say like junior, senior year of college is when I really got into it. And so, I mean, since then I realized that a lot of the things I like in film, like, you know, suspense and, you know, like suspense, thrillers, like espionage, a lot of that stuff is, you know, can be traced, you know, to Hitchcock. And so I've always felt like a really strong connection to him. And I love the 1940s, 1950s cinema. Like I love watching classic film, especially, you know, those like big Hollywood 1950s films, especially with like that, you know, that generation of movie stars. I really like those guys a lot. You know, like Grace Kelly and James Stewart and Cary Grant and Ingrid Bergman. And so I like doing that. And I wrote about Hitchcock a lot on my personal blog when I used to write for it. And so when I joined Talk Film Society, I wanted to contribute something that was kind of long lasting. And this was kind of the thing that came to mind. And I pitched it. And thankfully, Marcelo Pico, he approved it, and I guess he never told me to stop, so I just kept going.
Excellent. So, when you were writing the articles for them, like, so tell the listeners, what kind of approach did you take for your article itself on each of the films? Were you looking historical or just analysis of the film?
You know, I tried to do a little bit of both. I had the, Hitchcock Truffaut, interview book. And the interviews he did with Francois Truffaut, which I encourage all the listeners to pick up or, you know, check out from the library if they can, because to me that was my Bible. Like, I always, you know, I had that on my, you know, on my table at all times when I was writing, and I would try to go back into it and see what Hitchcock thought of a lot of those, you know, especially the early films where there isn't much criticism about it. And I also wanted to place these films in context of, you know, Hollywood history, especially regarding Hitchcock clashing with, you know, producers, screenwriters, actors, composers. I like talking about him as a human being, not just as, you know, this unknowable director that I just admire. Like, I wanted to reckon with him at his high points of his career and the low points in his life and his career. So for me, yeah, definitely I wanted to do a little bit of both. I mean, for some of the films, there really wasn't much to talk about, you know, especially like the early silent films that were just kind of a lot of, you know, romantic melodrama and a lot of comedies and stuff like that. And like, I mean, I joke that I don't like silent film, and I enjoyed those films, but to me it was more helpful going back to like what he thought about them. And there's also a writer by the name of Reed Lackey who writes for morethanonelesson.com. He was doing a Hitchcock project as well. So I was trying to read his articles, especially on the early films, because he, like you guys, was going in chronological order. So I would kind of look to see if he had an article on the film, and he had a lot of good criticism and analysis and historical context. So I used him as a resource as well. Actually, I found him later, about like a year ago I found him. So, but yeah, for like the films, like the early films that I covered, you know, back in 2017, like that was a little bit more analysis. That's stuff that I've seen those movies so many times that I can kind of rattle off my thoughts on those films like pretty easily.
Preparing for our interview with you today, I did a lot of reading of your work, and I quickly did a word count on your article about murder, and coincidentally, it's 666 words.
Oh my God.
It's 666. What parameters does your editor give you for your articles?
You know, they've been pretty lenient on the articles. I think as I was getting deeper and deeper into them, and it became more of a like muscle memory of just like how many words I wanted to put into it. And I think like Marcello would, he gave me the parameters of make it like between 700 to 1,000 words. I don't think I ever hit close to 1,000. I think some of my shorter ones were close to like the 600. I think one was even 550, because I really have like nothing to say about this movie. And I've noticed that I was repeating myself. So, but yeah, I mean, they've been very, very lenient on Talk Film Society about, you know, what they wanted me to talk about. I think they just, I think they also wanted me to give a little bit of a plot summary so that people kind of know what I'm talking about, which is, I mean, it's, I don't like doing plot summaries because I'm like, well, you can just read that on, you know, Wikipedia. But I think in the long run, I'm glad that I, you know, did those.
That's where we get all our plot summaries.
Yeah. Yeah, right, exactly.
Marcello's really great. Like, I wrote an article for Talk Film Society. They were doing one for Children of the Corn one Halloween, and I'm like, can I add one on for Children of the Corn 4? Because I love that movie so much. And he's like, sure. And so I wrote something up, and you know, I got, my mom's an English teacher, so I got her to proofread it and edit it for me. But when I submitted it to him, he's like, this is just perfect. And they just published it, and it was pretty easy working with Marcello. Marcello's a great guy. I love what he does over there on the Talk Film Society.
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing bad to say about Marcello. He's like one of the best guys to work for, especially like in this online film writing, you know, landscape that we're all in.
I mean, as you were talking everything, and it still is incredible to me that you've done all 52 kind of available Hitchcock films. Because I'm there, because when I sometimes look at the list that we still have to do, and I'm like, oh my God, we're only just like a little bit in, really. Right. We've only just entered the top.
Yeah, but you guys are out of the woods now. Like, you guys are talking about Young and Innocent, which is a movie I actually really like, and you're going to get into, yeah. Like, once you guys get into Rebecca and further, it's going to be awesome. So it's going to fly by.
I mean, we've hit kind of the first of the truly great ones back when we did Man I Knew Too Much, and, you know, The Lodger was always a bit of an anomaly, really, with all that sort of thing. But having covered them all, are there any films that you kind of knew before you undertook the project and had an opinion on, but which changed? You know, did you think of a film more positively, more negatively, when you started to do like a deep dive reflection on it?
You know, I'm trying to think. I don't really... I think a movie like Lifeboat from 1944. Like, that's one that I had seen before and remember enjoying. But then when I watched it again for the art, for the column, I was really floored by it. And I was like, this is actually, like, one of his best movies and one that, like, no one really talks about. Because it's just so, like, there aren't that many, like, big stars in it, at least compared to, like, his other Hollywood films. But, yeah, that's one that I was really, really into after watching it again for the column and, of course, reading about it. The 1930s, The Man Who Knew Too Much, is actually a movie I didn't like the first time I saw it, which was, you know, back in college, I guess, and it was just one of those where I was, like, not into it, but because I always had preferred the one with James Stewart and Doris Day, which I still do now, but second time around watching it again, I really, really liked it. That's all that I can really think of. The funny thing that I've noticed about, you know, me going into this column is I was wondering if, you know, my, like, top 10 or, like, my preferences about his films would really change, and I actually don't think that it has, because, I mean, his, like, classic films are his classics, and I was wondering if I was going to pick up on, like, an underseen gem or something where I'm like, no, like, this, you know, like, the Manx Men and The Ring were two films that I was dreading watching, and actually, you guys, your podcast episode on both of those was really helpful, because I actually went into those films, like, with, like, more of an open mind, because I was not into it. But yeah, I like those a lot. So I think those are the two that I was really surprised by.
Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you about Rope. So you wrote about that one for the LGBT Awareness Month there. And, you know, I haven't seen that movie in a really long time. And the last time I saw it, I never caught that. Like, I mean, I never caught the LGBT subtext that was in the film. So I'm looking forward to when we get to that. You know, being more socially aware now, being in social media has opened my eyes to a lot of these things. Do you find that this is an anomaly in Hitchcock's work, this film? Or, like, what do you think the influence was in Rope? Do you think it was in the play? Do you think it was Hitchcock in the movie?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I haven't read the play, nor have I seen the production of it, so I only can go by what I've read about it. And I do think that there's some subtext in the play itself, and I also think that some of the more, you know, homoerotic subtext in that film comes from Arthur Lawrence, who did the adaptation, I believe. So, and the thing is, like, it's not explicit. Like, there's no, obviously there's no, like, kissing between the two leads. There's nothing in the actual, like, written words of the dialogue or anything that would suggest, you know, a homosexual relationship between them. But it's all in the subtext, in my opinion. A lot of the dialogue can have a double meaning, and just, like, the for me, like, one of the more striking, you know, hints, I guess, to the homoerotic subtext is the opening scene, the opening murder scene, which is very breathless. And, you know, Hitchcock, I'm sure you guys have read this quote, but he said he, like, stages his murder scenes like love scenes and his love scenes like murder scenes. I don't remember when or where he said that, or if that's even a real quote or just one of those things that just gets passed along. But like, that murder scene feels very, you know, very erotic, a little kinky, you know, the strangulation, stuff like that. And the two performances between John Dahl and Farley Granger are just, to me, they just read more like a couple. You know, the fact that they're, like, sharing an apartment in New York City. Actually, in that article, I remember writing that there's, like, some question about how many bedrooms are in this apartment, because they only really talk about one bedroom. And you don't really see too much of the apartment because it's all kind of in the like, living room area. But so it's, like, a lot of subtext. I think if you watch it now, you know, with it in mind, it will jump out at you. But I think if you're not looking for it or you're not attuned to those kind of, like, innuendos and things like that, you might not catch it. I mean, there's like plenty of better written criticism than mine about the topic, and it's definitely there if you can kind of pick up on it. And but then if you, I've also read people say that like, no, they just come off like friends, and there's no sexual subtext to it. But so it's, I mean, it's one of those things that it's there if you see it, and it's not there if you don't see it.
Manish, how much interaction do you have with the readers of your articles, and do you have any really accurate way of measuring the scope of the popularity of the work?
That's a really good question. The only thing that I can really tell is how many retweets and likes it gets, or, you know, or comments under the articles or under the tweets. There are some people that I interact with frequently on Twitter who regularly will like retweet it and will talk about it, but I really don't know. I'm sure for like the more popular films, you know, that those would get shared more or read more, and the more obscure ones, they wouldn't be. I know there was one movie, you know, I'm actually looking at my column now because I know there was one movie that got a lot of traction online, and it's one of the more like obscure ones. I believe it was either Easy Virtue or Juno and the Pig. Like, for some reason, like, I remember getting a lot of likes and retweets on some article, and I'm like, this movie no one's ever heard of. Like, why? Like, unless you're someone who, like, you know, has gone through Hitchcock's filmography, like, not just watching it, but even just reading about it, like, you would know these films. But as like, I was confused as to how, especially because like, I think a few weeks before that I had done an article on one of the more famous films, and that got like almost no traction in terms of like the engagement on Twitter, at least through, you know, likes and retweets. So, you know, I really don't know. I mean, I was always afraid to ask Marcella because I'm afraid he'd be like, you know, actually, this doesn't get as many readers, so maybe we should cancel the series. But
you had a solid 5 that, readers, so. Manish.
Yeah.
5 people every time.
So, but yeah, I mean, I hope people read it and people will go back to it, you know, after the fact.
Yeah.
Well, I know we've definitely enjoyed reading your articles, that's for sure.
You know, have you guys invite me on to talk about it, and that you guys read it and stuff. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
So now that you've covered Hitchcock, is there another director you'll be considering doing this kind of in-depth look at? And if so, who would you consider?
You know, I think about it. Like, lately I've been actually doing a lot of, you know, marathons of, you know, directors, just because I'm just so fascinated. Like, last summer, like, I wasn't writing about them, but last summer I did, like, I watched all the films from, like, three directors that I really admire, like, Vincent Minnelli from, you know, the Golden Age of Hollywood, and Pedro Almodovar, the Spanish director, and Yash Chopra, who's an Indian filmmaker, or was. And, I mean, I wasn't planning on writing about them. It was just, you know, I was just curious and wanted to see if I could watch all, I think those were like 75 films between the three of them over the summer. So I did that. Like, right now I'm going through a Michael Mann marathon. I don't really have any plans to write about it, just because like I really liked doing the column, but it was very exhausting.
Yeah.
So no. Yeah. And like, I did like my M.Night Shyamalan podcast last winter. And right now I have my, like, romantic comedy podcast. So I'm focusing more on just, like, you know, whatever strikes my fancy and writing about it. I don't know. I think I might have to, like, think about it and see if there's something else I want, another project I want to undertake. And there's another director I really feel passionate about. But the thing is, like, I felt like I had more of a claim to write about Hitchcock on such a such a level, because I had been like watching his films for about, like, you know, 10 years. So, and had been reading about them and rewatching them and thinking about them. So I feel like, I mean, not that I think I have any authority over Hitchcock, but like, I felt more comfortable being like, okay, I'm going to do this and write about it. And I feel confident that I won't, you know, make a fool of myself. Whereas I feel like other directors that I'm not too familiar with now, I'm like, well, you know, I'm sure there are other people who have thought about these films more than I have, who, you know, are writing about them. So, yeah, I don't know. I'll think about it. I mean, definitely it was a lot of fun. Maybe in the few months when I'm, like, you know, ready to, like, take on another project, I'll think about it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well,
so after watching everything, what do you think is the one thing that sticks out the most about Hitchcock, and why do you think he's such an inspiration to so many movie directors?
I think because he was one of the first directors to bring artistry into populist filmmaking and have it be taken seriously. You know, I mean, the French New Wave directors, you know, like Truffaut, Jean-Luc Godard, you know, Claude Chabrol, or Chabret, yeah. All those guys, like, they were the first ones to think about these films as, you know, pieces of cinematic art. And so I think that he did all those, and he did all that with, like, genre films, you know, like horror and thriller, suspense, espionage, stuff like that. So I think that because he was successful in marrying kind of these pop art sensibilities with, you know, a certain identifiable artistic brand, artistic aesthetic, I think that's why he is influential to so many directors. I mean, even now, I mean, I've been doing this, I mean, I've been thinking about this for so long, about being able to, like, catch Hitchcockian touches in, you know, modern films, like, especially the films of David Fincher, Michael Mann, as I mentioned earlier, James Wan, even, you know, with, like, his, you know, horror films. So there's, these films are, Hitchcock's films are so influential because he created, codified, expanded on genre in such a way that it, you know, meant a lot to audiences. His films are very popular, and also was able to be picked apart as, you know, pieces of art.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Fincher, one of the things that I think influenced Fincher the most is in Fincher's movies, he has one very interesting sequence in each of his films, and Hitchcock kind of did that as well. You know, like, you get to Zodiac, and you've got that really neat sequence with the taxi, right, where the camera, like, the taxi just stays straight in the taxi, or in the shot the whole time, but the camera's turning, mm-hmm. but the taxi stays right, in the right. same spot every time. Is really neat. And then you got the sequence in Panic Room, you know, like, where that starts up top and then goes down and through the keyhole and whatnot. You know, so I think that's something that influenced Fincher. And, you know, you just did the Shyamalan podcast, and I know that Shyamalan was highly influenced by Hitchcock as well, you know. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he's somebody who continues to influence to this day. And I think it's because he always was trying something new with the camera.
Yeah, and I mean, I always was try to find, like, you know, the scene, you know, with every Hitchcock film that I watched, you know, like you were saying, like, the one, you know, like, the one sequence where all of his engines were running and he was, you know, working at full speed. And, you know, it was easier to find those sequences in more films and harder in others. Especially, I mean, I guess, like, as he was developing, you know, his aesthetic in the 1930s and 1940s, and then once you get into the 1950s, I mean, that's, to me, is, I think, his peak period. Although I do, I mean, I have a soft spot for The Birds and Marnie and Frenzy as well. So, I really think that he's just influential because he just was always innovating and inventing and thinking outside the box and figuring out ways to get around, you know, the censorship. And trying to do a lot by not showing a lot, you know, through suggestion or off camera or innuendos. So I think that's something that really resonates with people because it makes you think more about what you're watching.
I have one quick question, and this could be a really quick, short answer from me too. It's kind of related to what we were already talking about. If you could just name one Hitchcock film that you would recommend to a student cinematographer, which film would it be?
A cinematographer specifically? I would have to say Rear Window, Vertigo, Notorious.
One film.
Okay, well, I would say if it's one film, maybe Notorious would be the one.
Yeah.
Because
that also is the top of my list for films which would do really good with a Duran Duran theme song.
Yeah. I could totally see that, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to do that. I'd love to re-edit that.
I think you got to do it.
Yeah. We'll do that as a promo for our show.
Yeah.
Well, Chris and Tom, do you have any more questions?
I'm good.
I think we've talked about pretty much everything. Yeah, it's been great.
Well, then, Manish, I'll leave this open to you here. Is there anything about Hitchcock that you wanted to tell the listeners right now that we haven't asked you about? Anything that you found during your reviewing of these films?
You know, one thing that I wish I talked more about was his relationship with Alma Revel. I think she is like the secret hero of his career. And so, you know, I think listeners, if you are watching Hitchcock, always look out for her name in the credits. She's usually a script supervisor or story by, or, I mean, she has writing credits. And I wish people would like look into her more because she's a fascinating woman. I wish I touched on her more just as a figure in his personal life and his career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so for listeners that aren't quite aware of that, so that was his wife.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they worked together. Like, they got married and then they worked together. So, excellent. Well, Manish, take this time. Tell us what you're working on. Tell us about your romantic comedy podcast. Tell us anywhere else that people could find you online.
Yeah, so switching totally from, you know, the horror and suspense of Shyamalan and Alfred Hitchcock, I am doing a podcast on romantic comedies called It Pod to Be You, and you can find that on the Talk Film Society Network. And basically, I'm inviting a guest to come on and, you know, pick a romantic comedy, and we just chat about it for 45 minutes, just like total free flow conversation. I love romantic comedies, and so I just wanted to do something to highlight them because I feel like they don't really get talked about enough as like a serious, you know, genre. So yeah, I mean, if you guys want to do a crossover with like To Catch a Thief or anything like that, I'd love that. Or, you know, because to me, that's like the Hitchcock romantic comedy.
Oh, like Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Oh yeah, yeah. But even that, I mean, that's a really interesting movie. But it's, to me, that doesn't like resonate as a Hitchcock
film. No.
I mean, even he would say it's more of a Carol Lombard vehicle than anything. I think he was just like, he just wanted to work with her. But yeah, so check out that podcast. I mean, all the podcasts on our network are really exciting and interesting. So, you know, listeners, please subscribe to the channel.
And we're going to have you on again very shortly. You've asked to be on for Rebecca when we get to that.
Yes, I love Rebecca so much.
Yeah, good.
That'd be another one for cinematographers. I think they could learn a lot from that film. So. Mm.
Well, before you go, Manish, so where are you online? You have Twitter handle?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at TheManish89. That's TheManish89. Also on TalkFilmSociety.com. You know, you can check out my column, Beginner's Guide to Alfred Hitchcock. They're all still there. And who knows what I'll be writing about next. So look out there for that. And yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Really had a great time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got a hot take for you. I think that Unbreakable is extremely overrated, and I think The Happening and The Village are extremely underrated.
You know, The Happening is a very interesting movie. It's definitely not boring. Well, it is boring, but it's like interesting in a boring way.
I love The Happening so much. I think it's my favorite Shyamalan film.
You got to talk to Marcel about that. He loves The Happening. He like requested that one as soon as I announced the podcast.
I know, I messaged you too. I'm like, did anybody sign up for The Happening? Yeah. You're like, Marcelo did. I'm like, damn it.
Well, you know, it's funny because I didn't know that you liked the movie. And so I was like, I don't want to have someone on who's just going to like dunk on it because like I don't want to, like I didn't want the podcast to just be us like, you know, ragging on this movie. I wanted to like actually dive into it. So now that I know that you liked it, I wish I had had you on. But yeah, if you guys, you know, ever want to talk about, you know, romantic comedy, just let me know. Love to have all of you on.
We'd like to thank our good friend Jason Cullimore for creating our wonderful theme song for our podcast. And you can find him at jasoncullimore.com. Please be sure to check out his work. He's got lots of wonderful albums. Thank you so much to the Fandom Podcast Network for allowing us to release our episodes in their master feed. You can find us as well in our own independent podcast feed. And please be sure to check out all the wonderful shows that they've got in their feed, because there's some great shows dealing with movies and music and pop culture in general and sports. Lots of great stuff. And we'd also like to direct you to our good friends Annie and Catherine and their podcast, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock Presents podcast. Between our two shows combined, you can get a near comprehensive look at the Grand Master's work, because they cover all the episodes of Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Well, thank you so much for joining us. Listeners, please be sure to check out his articles. They're wonderful. But that's all we've got for you now. So until next time, good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
We'd also like to direct you to our good friends Annie and Catherine and their podcast, Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock Presents podcast. Between our two shows combined, you can get a near comprehensive look at the Grand Master's work, because they cover all the episodes of Good Evening, of an Alfred, blah, 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 blah.